Since last Sunday, when many of us gathered here, the hurricane known as Irma has concluded. Florida, Texas, as well as Louisiana and parts of other states are now trying to, what, dry out, throw out, seek to rebuild, or simply move out to another place to call home. On Wednesday of this last week, the remnants of Irma made it here to Bloomington. It was at times kind of fun. It was not like walking through droplets of rain. It was more like just a curtain of water. It was just kind of an interesting experience. For events like Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, I'm something of a CNN slug. I watch the coverage leading up to both of these tremendously huge storms, much like I watched the years of the miniseries Lost. Every week, watching those shows for 6 or so years, I knew it was going to be one disaster after another, but we just couldn't stop watching. To review it all, my daughter Kaylee and I binge-watched the whole series in one summer, 6 years worth. Binge-watching is kind of like Thanksgiving dinner. You know you shouldn't, but you also know that you are. So we gather here this morning in relative comfort and good health, ready to eat a phenomenal after-church luncheon, and we are still surrounded just to our south by multiple millions who are suffering really horribly, who feel lost, many who have really no hope of getting on their feet again. We are, if we're paying attention, shocked and concerned about individuals in cities and states, as well as about the global climate-changing realities that continue just to be present, screaming at us, in fact, begging us to take all possible actions to protect our lives and our planet. I find myself in the midst of that, asking those big questions. Will God save my children, my granddaughter, you and yours, from the projected climate change disasters, as God has said to have saved the Jewish people and their children from that advancing Egyptian army? Is there something wrong with praying to God for deliverance, for help, for making a way where there appears to be no way? What about the godly inspired and executed violence in this Exodus story? What about the billions of people in lower-lying areas of our world who will die from rising tides, shifting coastlines, disease, starvation, as the shorelines of our ocean change faster than 1 or 2 billion people are able to relocate? I loved the Exodus story in the movie by Cecil D. DeMille. I grew up, religiously speaking, being taught that God loved the Jews best of all. God killed the Egyptians because they weren't listening to God's words through Moses. As a child, that's a weighty issue. I can't tell you how often I was asked at home by my parents and at school by the teachers, "Jack, you aren't listening to my words." And the penalty of disobedience was death for the Egyptians. My childhood God was pretty tough. The story has to be preached about because we have a tendency as human beings to want to claim that God is on our side, and therefore what we do is also blessed by God. Such one-sided divine partnership is morally and theologically problematic and inspires the belief that God unambiguously supports some persons and then destroys others without regret. The belief is still rampant among religious fundamentalists, including those who believe that today's nation of Israel is entirely blameless and justified in pursuing its self-preservation by any means necessary, not to mention Muslims committed to limiting the freedom of Christians in Muslim-dominated nations and then advocating militant responses to infidels. Taken literally, theologically and biblically speaking, this passage assumes that the suffering of the Egyptians is of no consequence to God. Well, they had their chance. They are merely cardboard figures in a divine drama, and the pain and the suffering of the soldiers' children, parents, spouses, not to mention their own feelings of terror, carries no moral weight or importance to God and by implication to us. If, as I prefer to believe, that God is the fellow sufferer who understands, then the pain of the Egyptians also matters in the same way as the anxiety that's currently being felt by the Dhaka youth, by Syrian refugees, North Korean citizens. We cannot separate the world into those who feel pain and those who don't, or those who have value and those who don't have value to us. Or we will soon devalue the pain of any opponent, negating any element of value of their experience, as it seems to be a growing norm in how persons respond to opposing groups in our nation today. Polarization certainly leads to devaluing the other side. Is it okay to pray to God for deliverance? How has God delivered you? Have you been disappointed when you were not given a way out of your predicament? I have. How has life happened since then, for worse or for better? The story of the Jewish Exodus is both a simple tale and one of just really complex realities. It is first and foremost a story of an individual Moses encountering God as a fire that simply would not go out. It would not extinguish. God burned deeply in the soul of Moses, and Moses carried that flame, that torch of truth, forward as he sought the emancipation of his people from horrible oppression. His faith merged with the faith of his people, and together they journeyed to a new home. The Jewish people today honor the deep trust of their ancestors who believed. The flame of hope burns still in the Jewish people. Many of the details of the rise of the Jewish nation contain details of horror and destruction of native and original peoples, the Palestinians, the Canaanites, in ways that certainly resemble the extermination of the Native Americans and the enslavement of African Americans in our country. Most of our ancestors in this room crossed the Atlantic in an exodus, like the Jews crossed the Jordan River, and they came to this land seeking religious and economic freedoms and created a country of beauty and high principles and wisdom and government in new and exciting ways, as well as creating problems and abusing and killing people in tremendously destructive ways. Was it the will of God to be here in Bloomington, and that our Hoosier ancestors displaced the Miami and the Delaware and the Potawatomi, the Kickapoo and the Wee and the Shawnee? I seriously doubt it. But I would bet that most of my ancestors believed that they were justified by God in displacing the original populations to either reservations or a speedy death. Because it is so easy to feel led by God to get what we want. Jesus' response to Peter in that Matthew reading this morning and the subsequent parable reminds us that we are all always standing in need of great grace and forgiveness. When we would judge others, we would best first look at our own behaviors. Recognizing our own imperfection does not lead to ethical relativity, but to empathy and relativity. Understanding of where others are coming from in terms of their life experiences. Forgiveness, I think, requires a type of spiritual relativism. The letting go of my righteousness and the recognition of my imperfection. I'm not talking about yours. I'm just going to talk about mine. How many times should we forgive? Jesus is asked. And I think the answer is infinite, beyond even 77 times 7 or whatever. And then Jesus tells the tale of an unforgiving one of us who is given great grace but refuses to pass it along to his co-worker. Grace and forgiveness are global, universal, and essential to life. We all need grace and forgiveness, maybe just me. For I have fallen short of my highest values, and I have implicitly or explicitly harmed others. I wonder if in recognizing our imperfections, we can no longer stand apart from others based on our assumed righteousness and their obvious weakness and immorality. We are all part of a dynamic ecology of imperfection. And grace, in which no one stands alone. There is no other. Accordingly, we cannot demonize the Egyptians, Palestinians, Israelis, North Koreans, the law enforcement officers, and those who are slain by them, justly or unjustly. We may even have to forgive political leaders. God, I didn't want to write this. We may even have to forgive political leaders whose policies we believe to be destructive of the body politic. I said it. This doesn't mean that we acquiesce to their positions. We may still need to picket and protest, but can we still see them as God's beloved and broken children? Thank you. Forgiveness is grounded in interdependence and holy relativity. It doesn't mean foregoing justice or putting an end to the legal system. Crimes have to be addressed, and serious criminals have to be taken off the streets. But even the serious criminal is kindred. The culture that supports us economically and in terms of privilege may also have influenced her or his poor decision-making. I still don't blame college kids getting drunk all the time as much as I blame us for supporting a drinking culture. There is no one who is completely innocent or guilty. In the spirit of Romans 14 that we did not read, grace and forgiveness invites us to live before God, placing our whole lives at God's mercy, knowing that apart from amazing grace, we're all in trouble. Grace is everything in the faithful journey. Still, how can we be graceful in the corporate context? How can we protect our nation, even to the point of necessary violence, without demonizing or polarizing? We receive no guidance on this point from that Exodus story, which in fact encourages polarization and demonization. The chosen ones prove themselves to be just as ambiguous as the slain Egyptians, and they are still just as ambiguous in the current Israeli foreign policy, despite the necessity of Israel to protect its sovereignty in a hostile region. No easy answers. Did God mourn the loss of Egyptian life when you go home and explain this to your kids? Can we mourn the apparently necessary death of ISIS troops to preserve our national interests? Violence may be necessary in the affairs of persons and nations. But I think it must be accompanied always by a sense of uneasiness, regret, and solidarity with those that we must confront. This is challenging for citizens who seek to follow the pathway of Jesus, who taught us forgiveness in institutional and political as well as personal lives. I think we all need to struggle with not only the imperfect world, but also our imperfect selves, whom God loves and showers us with grace and mercy, Might we so shower the world of people? A good shower of mercy might just change a heart to grow. Abraham Lincoln was fond of saying regarding his political opponents, he says, it's best to flatter them into friendship, or else pray that God call them home.